This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy. And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
We get the best start to the day because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
I know a lot about him. You know, me and him were supposed to be teammates before, so the world works in mysterious ways, so I'm excited to finally unite with him and get to work.
We're back with the Mully and Haw Draft Special featuring Olin Krut on Sports Radio 670 The Score and the free Odyssey app.
Mully and Haw and Olin Krut, we are getting ready for the rest of the NFL draft and picking apart what has happened thus far. And that, of course, was the voice of Luther Burden III. He is the man that that was taken with the first pick of the Bears' second round. And they traded out of the second pick and came back up later, but he apparently was once recruited by USC and nearly went there and played with
Oklahoma. Almost played together at Oklahoma. Yeah. He talked about Caleb Williams nearly becoming his teammate, and now he's looking forward to being given that opportunity in Chicago with the Bears, and he's a difference maker in terms of what he does after the catch, and that's what he makes him dangerous, and that's why he went in the second round, 39th overall, later than he expected. But if you perform like a first rounder, nobody's going to remember where you were selected.
No, I don't think that's going to be something you're going to have to worry about. That never seems to come into play. All right, we've got
David Siverson from Our Lads
is with us now. He is with Our Lads. We had a couple of great conversations with him before the draft. And a delight to talk to him now. He joins us on the Aturo Tire Hotline. Aturo, your hometown tire, aturo.com. David, we got Mully and Haw and Olin Krut this morning. How you doing?
Guys, I'm doing great. How are you? What a great weekend so far for Chicago.
Do you like their draft? Do you like what they've done thus far?
Yeah, I am on the side of the entire plan for this franchise has been to support Caleb Williams. And I don't know between them and New England who has done a better job, but I know this. Go compare what the Bears are doing for Caleb Williams this offseason and last in terms of supporting him. And go show the contrast between what they did with Justin Fields. I mean, when Justin Fields was drafted, you know, that next year, their first two picks were spent on defensive backs. The year after that, three of their first four picks were spent on the defensive side of the ball. And I know you need balance, and there's more than one way to build a roster, but they have gone all in on giving Caleb Williams everything he needs from both a protection, a scheme/coaching, and most importantly, in this case, the playmakers. So I like the macro-level plan.
David, let's focus quickly on Friday night's haul. Quick thumbnail sketches on Luther Burden III, we just spoke of, wide receiver from Missouri, taken 39th. Ozzie Trapio, the offensive tackle from Boston College, at 56. And Shamar Turner, the defensive tackle from Texas A&M, at 62nd. How do those guys project in your mind?
Well, in regard to Luther Burden, ironically, you guys brought him up being a second-round pick. At the end of my report, to quote, this is the best yard after catch player in the draft, and it isn't close. He is a faster version of Deebo Samuel. Deebo Samuel, a former second rounder. And that is what the kind of player I think you're getting, and I think this is the kind of scheme that can produce the same kind of result. Luther Burden was my number 15 overall player in the entire draft class. Getting him in the second round, whether you have hustle concerns or not, is worth the gamble. Trapillo is a guy that You know, it just shows me that they're not completely solidified with what they want to do on the offensive line at left tackle over the next 2 years. But even if he doesn't end up being a starter, he's a great swing tackle. I think every good offensive line has a quality swing tackle because these guys get hurt. And if you don't have enough depth, it can ruin a season if you don't have enough depth. And they have a couple guys now in that room that they've drafted on day two of the draft, and hopefully between him and Amagetti that – hey, one of these guys hopefully is in that swing tackle who could contend for a starting role. And Shamar Turner is a guy that was really banged up this past season, shoulder and foot issues, but he's also been kind of jostled around by that Texas A&M staff. He was an oversized defensive end for 2 years. He was a three technique for 2 years. That is where I see him having a lot of success at the next level. Angry, physical, big dude that plays a really nice brand of football that I think Chicago is going to love.
David, those guys you talked about, the linemen, are two guys I want to talk about a little more. Trapillo, talking to a few guys that I really respect, they said not left tackle at all. I wonder what you thought about that. When I watched him, I thought he has a chance to learn and grow, maybe into that position, not be elite, but at least, like you're saying, come out there and do his job. And then Turner, any worry about that stress fracture healing and the things that he's going through that affects his explosiveness?
Yeah, I mean, the thing about Trapillo, right, he's 6'8", 316. I normally don't like guys that tall because they have a hard time staying balanced. And he's not a good athlete. He's not a bad athlete. I do see a right tackle in his future. Similar play style to Roger Rosengarten, who was a day two pick from Baltimore last year. A little bit of an afterthought, but he ended up making the R-Lads all-rookie team last year. Just a really silent, reliable blue-collar style of football. And one thing about him being that tall and typically being worried about it, he stays on his feet. I mean, I've watched all the tape on him. He rarely ended up on the ground. I think there's something there with him that makes you feel safe. It's kind of one of those high floor, low ceiling projections. I do agree that he'll probably end up better on the right side. But again, I think his future is he could play both sides. He could be that swing tackle. Shamar Turner, there are concerns with the foot healing. He does have some hardware in that foot now. But, you know, that is where the medical screening, that's where that part of the process, you know, I take a step back from there. The coach, the medical staff in Chicago did a full screening on them. If they gave him the thumbs up, I'm not going to stay up night thinking about it.
I'm curious, David, when you look at the running back position, you know, we talked about the number of them in this draft, and it seems like there has yet to be the big run on the running backs. It seems like there are some left that can do some things. Who would you say is the best running back left? And I'm curious of your thoughts on the best interior guy left.
Yeah, so in regard to the backfield, there's a back available, and this is who I think Chicago's targeting at the top of the fourth round, that fits into a mold of the running back what Detroit had under Ben Johnson and Jahmyr Gibbs. Obviously not the same tier here in the fourth round, but stylistically, Dylan Sampson from Tennessee, slightly undersized, but incredibly explosive, fast, looks like he's on ice skates when he's running with the football. He breaks a lot of tackles, not because he's big and physical, he's just hard to touch. He's very slippery, and if he gets you out in the open field, he can make things happen. And the dude had 22 touchdowns in the SEC last year, averaged over 6 yards per carry. I'm actually surprised he's still there, and I think that's going to be a target for this offense. When you're talking about the interior, are you talking about the interior offensive line?
No, I was. I'm sorry, I was looking for a running back between the tackles. I was thinking that Damian Martinez kid maybe from Miami. Yes. He does a good job with that. We talked about Cam Scadaboo. I think they need, you know, some help inside.
Also, though, help inside helps. But David, when you look at the running back position, they're 109th in the fourth round, 109th overall. Is Jaden Blue a guy from Texas? 4.28 at his pro day, 4.3 at the combine. This is a guy who can fly and gives them an element they don't really have. I just wonder how enamored teams will be with somebody like that.
Yeah, I mean, the speed is the name of the game with him, and he's definitely going to be a pass game weapon. The question with him, on a back that you are really kind of putting into a very specific role, he had a few too many fumbles on tape, he dropped a few too many passes on tape, and if that is going to be his specialty, there is not a lot of margin for error if that's what you're going to bring him in for. If you want the best pass-catching back in this group, it's probably Dylan Sampson, although they didn't use him that much in that Tennessee offense. Hard offense to project to the NFL, as seen with the quarterbacks and wide receivers that have come out. But he does have good hands. He does run receiver-caliber routes. Cam Scadabo, I'm telling you guys, I know that there are fears in taking him with how violent he plays, but that guy is an excellent pass catcher out of the backfield. And I think that if that's what you're looking for, one of those three names is going to be it. But Damian Martinez is the guy. If you want a big bruiser in between the tackles, move the chains, offset what you currently have. I love how heavy he plays, but he's a great lateral mover as well. He knows how to miss contact. He's not just a straightforward power back.
Dave, when I look at the Chicago Bears, I think to myself, okay, is there a left tackle left that could compete with Braxton Jones or Karan Amagaji, also a safety or some pass rush? So out of those three, who's your favorite guy for the Chicago Bears with these rounds, with the fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh round left?
If you want a playmaker in the secondary, he's undersized. He's a nickel safety slash hybrid. But Billy Bowman from Oklahoma has some of the most exciting tape. He's an energy stick for an entire defense. He pursues sideline to sideline. He is a crazy good athlete with the ball in his hand. He's got some pick sixes that makes you think about Devin Hester in terms of how well he was moving contact. That's how elusive he is. If you want an edge rusher, I think there's a guy that was a tackle for loss monster. He also had 9 forced fumbles over his career. And I like guys that can play low to the ground with power and quickness. And it's Antoine Powell Ryland from Virginia Tech. Probably going to be more of a back half of day three pick. But that's exactly where I think the Bears are going to be looking to add another edge rusher if they do.
Everyone's talking about Shedeur Sanders. What to you is the big storyline out of this draft?
The big storyline to me out of this draft is how late the cornerbacks went. I mean, we didn't see a corner go until number 20, and Jahdae Barron was the first one, and then you see Will Johnson and Benjamin Morrison. I know those guys had some medical red flags, but I was still surprised to see how far down they went. And I know everyone's going to talk about the Shedeur Sanders. I'm not that surprised. I was day two great on him regardless. I never saw him as a first rounder. I think that's more of a media creation in terms of him, quote, falling. I can't really tell you that Shedeur Sanders is head and shoulders above any of the quarterbacks that went, including Dillon Gabriel. So to me, that's not a huge surprise. It's just more of a huge story. But I also was really surprised to see how fast the offensive lineman came off the board. We had 8 go in round one, and this was not viewed as a very strong offensive line class in general. But what I think it showed is that it was thinner. The room would thin out pretty quickly if you didn't get your hands on one of those top 12 to 15 guys. So I did not see that coming with the offensive line, how quickly they came off the board.
Talking with David Sivertson from Our Lads here on the Mully and Haw Draft Day Special featuring Olin Krutz. David, let's go back to Thursday night. Which was more surprising in that context? The fact that 3 offensive tackles were off the board before the Bears were on the clock at number 10, or the fact that when they were on the clock, they took Colston Loveland over Tyler Warren?
I was surprised by Loveland over Warren, but they are completely different players. So what does Ben Johnson want to work with? If he wanted a better, like, vertical threat, a guy that was a little bit freer moving and had a little bit more potential in terms of catch radius and making plays with the ball in the air, and someone similar to Sam Laporta with who he had a lot of success with in Detroit, it was Loveland. But I just thought that Tyler Warren brought a lot more personality, a lot more yard after catch ability with his ability to break tackles. I mean, the contrast and the size and toughness and physicality of those two is night and day, A, in contested situations, but B, after the catch. I think Colston Loveland, he broke, I think, 4 or 5 tackles this past year after the catch. Warren's in the 25 to 28 range. I mean, completely different players in terms of what they bring to the offense. But he is a better athlete, and he does bring a little bit more fluidity to the route running. And 2024 was not an ideal year for him because the quarterback play really dropped off a cliff, and there was no other threat in that passing game. So much attention was put on Loveland. So I could see that he's going to be a third down and red zone machine. I think he's going to just get Caleb Williams a lot of easy completions because he's going to be able to get open.
David, you talked to us about Billy Bowman from Oklahoma and Antoine Powell Ryland, the edge. Any other favorites today that when you were watching film, you fell in love with those guys, watching these second-day guys, and thought to yourself, man, whoever gets these guys late in this draft, they're going to get themselves a player?
Great question. Danny Stutzman, Oklahoma linebacker, teammate of Billy Bowman, and Barrett Carter, Clemson, one of the favorites of that coaching staff, guy that's been on the radar for multiple years. He's a weak side Mike type. He can play either role. He's a coach's dream come true. They said that he's one of the best leaders that have ever come through that program. And Danny Stutzman is just an energy stick that makes a lot of plays behind a lot of scrimmage, and that's where a lot of linebackers, if you're looking for one analytic stat that kind of carries over to success at the next level, it's off-ball linebackers that have a lot of production behind the line of scrimmage, and Danny Stutzman did that. And he tested out athletically a lot better than what I think many were anticipating. So those are two linebackers I think would be really nice additions to the depth chart and to see if they can turn into something more down the road.
David, at this point, do you have like a favorite team? Do you like what any one team has done more than any others?
I mean, I love what the Ravens do, and I feel like I say it every year, but they just stick to the board. I mean, Malachi Starks, I mean, he was one of the 10 best players in my draft, and I graded him exactly the same, the exact same number through an entire process that goes through hundreds of grades as Kyle Hamilton, Cooper DeJean, and Brian Branch. All three of those guys are kind of like the hybrid nickel safeties that fell draft weekend in their respective drafts, and they go to contenders, and they're star players for star teams. And that's what I think Malachi Starks will be. They get Mike Green, who does have some off-field concerns, but that is a guy that if he stays clean and they hit his upside, he could be the top edge rusher on that team by the end of the year. And Emory Jones was a guy that preseason, guys, I thought he was going to be a first or second round pick. Tape didn't go well. He might need to move inside, but that guy has talent and a lot of good tape against a lot of good competition.
Last question before we let you go, David, and really appreciate your time this morning breaking everything down for us. When you watched the first round, as somebody who does this for a living, was there a team that drafted a guy that made you gasp and say, oh my gosh, that's a reach?
Man, in this draft especially, it was hard to label a lot of guys a reach. You saw a few surprises here and there, but I would say the pick that surprised me the most going through this list right now was Maxwell Harrison. I know he was a 30th overall pick, so I don't want to say that was too much of a reach, but it was a surprise to me because he does not fit with what McDermott usually goes after at corner. There's an injury concern with him, and he only really has about 6 or 7 quality games in his career at Kentucky. He was a really up-and-down player with his bat was just as good. But I'll say right now that I'm looking at it, the biggest reach to me personally would be Tyler Booker going to Dallas at number 12 overall. I understand the ethos behind size and power and dominance, but he to me, I mean, he tested out as bad as you're ever going to find anyone, and I saw that on tape. I never put a first-round grade on him because I didn't think he was a natural enough athlete. He's not good at keeping his feet active and twitchy, and he plays with his numbers and face mask looking at the ground too often, and that scares me a lot at the next level.
Great stuff, David. Thanks again. Appreciate it.
Thanks, David.
Thanks so much, guys. Have a great day.
Wow, that's pretty good. I enjoy hearing from a guy like that. That was a great question, Olin, about the guys that he really likes that he's seen on film. And you're so right. Like when they played the tape of Green right after he was taken, you're like, mm-hmm. Oh my God, is that guy good? Like, how did that guy last that
well,
long?
Well, he lasted that long for reasons that are complicated. But right. I think from a football standpoint, Olin, he jumped off the screen. His tape was as impressive as any edge rusher in this draft.
Yeah, his bend and explosiveness and how fast he got to the quarterback was extremely impressive. And I think everybody knows. I think everyone thought the same thing about him when they watched the film, right? And it just, like you're saying, David, sometimes it's complicated why you don't take a guy and why he doesn't go early. But, you know, guys like David, man, I mean, the amount of film they watch and the amount of players they know, it's always amazing to me to hear them roll through all the players and the teams and, you know, ask them a question about who's the best running back, and he knows all the running backs, and there's so much to know. So it's always good to listen to guys who have studied this so much.
It's such an industry now, Olin, and guys like David do such a nice job making a living out of evaluating prospects. Just curious, about 25 years ago or so, back when you were coming out, did you have that awareness of all the ways that you were being evaluated? Or it wasn't as much back then, but how much do players and prospects respect the ways that guys evaluate them and the people doing the evaluation?
Well, like we talked about Shedeur Sanders, right? And of course, nowadays with social media and Twitter, and you talked about he posted on Instagram, Burden did about, you know, he went to go work out, and you know, you just hear about it so much more. But you know, we were still being evaluated back then, and your shirt's off, and they're taking your, you know, your arm length, and for me, it was my size coming out, and heard a lot about being too small and not having enough arm length and not being strong enough to move guys at the point of attack. And you hear all your negatives, and that's the hardest thing to hear coming out of college. And a lot of guys do, right? But obviously nowadays with all, like you're saying, it's such a big business now. And the NFL draft has just exploded where they can put it in Green Bay and have tremendous success, right? It looks great on TV, and they do a great job promoting it. And it's just a really, really, really big event nowadays, and it's grown to something where, you know, there's all kind of services where you can go to and learn about who these prospects are, where they're from, what they're good at, what they're not good at. It's an amazing thing to watch and be a part of.
Speaking of Green Bay, do you have anything you'd like to say to Clay Matthews in reply?
I don't think Mitch Rosen would like what I would have to say. Clay Matthews on live radio.
Speaking of Green Bay, Olin, how many of those people are living in their cars overnight? I mean, they don't have enough hotel rooms for all those people.
That is an amazing event. Just to see all those people out there. And, you know, I thought Rollins did a nice job for the Bears, right, going out there. And Seth Rollins, the WWE wrestler, I thought he was enjoyable to listen to.
That was hysterical.
Did a great job out there. Yeah. It was hysterical.
Oh,
so,
that guy was.
I think they should bring him back to do everything for Chicago Bears. So, but what an event it has turned into, man.
All right, we'll be right back on the draft show, Mully and Haw Draft Show with Olin Kreutz. We got a name. Okay.
Let's get back to more of the Mully and Haw Draft Special featuring Olin Kreutz on Sports Radio 670 The Score and the free Odyssey app.
Welcome back. It is our draft show, Mully and Haw, with the great Olin Kreutz helping us figure it out. And Olin, before the break, you mentioned Seth Rollins, and he came out and presented a draft pick, and he is a WWE wrestler, so he knows how to handle crowds of any sort. So when the booing began, he was prepared for it.
Ah! Ah! Green Bay, Wisconsin! Is that you got? Come on, you can be louder than that. I know y'all mad because championship gold looks good on the blue and orange. But in all seriousness, Green Bay, we are in the shadow of Lambeau Field. And I love Lambeau Field because the king of the North, the best quarterback in the NFC North, Caleb Williams, is undefeated at Lambeau Field. Oh. And in case y'all aren't familiar with my game, let me remind you, I am a visionary. I am a revolutionary. I am Seth freaking Rollins. And I am here to tell you that with the 56th pick in the 2025 NFL draft, the greatest franchise in the NFL, the Chicago Bears, select Ozzie Trapillo, tackle from Boston College. Let's burn it down and bear down, Chicago.
Oh, my God. That guy was hilarious.
It was awesome. And he just had a great WrestleMania also.
Yeah.
Right? He just beat Roman Reigns, another Chicago guy, CM Punk. Teamed up with Bron Breakker and Paul Heyman. You know, I watched WrestleMania with all my kids. So To have him come out and do that was awesome.
It was in Vegas, I believe, WrestleMania.
Yep, it was. Two-day event nowadays. It's huge.
Jeez, unbelievable. That guy, that was just so funny. And the people booing him and his whole, like, he's perfect for that role because he's, that's what he wants. Loved it. Unbeaten at Lambeau. Oh, come on.
You watching more wrestling than baseball these days, Olin?
Yeah, probably. More wrestling, probably more wrestling than even the NBA nowadays. But although it's the playoffs, so I watch a little more.
Mm. All right, so let's get back to draft talk. You mentioned when you were talking about different positions, you mentioned the safety position when we were talking to David. That is a really interesting one because I don't know how to feel about Jaquan Brisker and his clean bill of health. I'm delighted for it, and I hope that holds up. But you worry about a guy that's taken some of those shots and has multiple concussions, multiple years of missing time.
If you're Dennis Allen, how much do you count on Jaquan Brisker being your regular starting strong safety in 2025?
Oh, man. I mean, how many games did he miss after, I think it was the London trip last year, right? We didn't see him.
It was again, after the Carolina game in Chicago. He didn't, I don't even think he went to London. Oh, it was before that. He had the collision with Tommy Tremble with the Panthers and never played again.
What a hit.
Yeah, what a hit.
And finished that game, right? And then, and then we saw him again. But I don't know how you can't, right? And that's not a knock on Jaquan Brisker. I think we all think, when he's on the field, I don't want to speak for you guys, but I think he's a good football player, right? He's the kind of guy you want. He's a, you know, he helps support the run, does good against the pass, good blitzer. But when you don't see a guy for that long for the injury that he had, you start to worry, of course, a little bit. So I'm sure the Chicago Bears, well, they won't admit it, but when they're in their room by themselves, Ryan Poles, Allen, Coach Johnson, their whole team up there, they have to be talking about what's our plan. Strong safety, right? If we go through this again, can we count on this guy? And this is the NFL, guys. So the answer is no. The answer is no, you can't until he proves otherwise.
Billy Bowman is from Oklahoma. That was the safety that David Sivertson mentioned. He's 5'10". He's 192 pounds. He runs a 4.440. And he's like a lot of safeties that come into the draft. That's not a premium position. So the rankings somewhat reflect that. Now, sure, if you're Malachi Sparks, you're going to go in the first round, and the Ravens always seem to be drafting safeties who are elite. But I do think you look at a guy like Billy Bowman, he will be on the board and worth consideration, probably closer to 109 where the Bears pick in the fourth round than 148 in the fifth, Olin. I just wonder, is safety a priority today, or is your priority going into the resumption of the draft, which starts at about 25 minutes, the best player available?
I think safety and interior offensive line and a running back, like Mully has talked about, for me is probably the three positions I'm looking at. You know, if there is an edge, which we talked to David about, those four different positions, who is the best player at those positions is what I'm doing. I'm probably doing, David, this late in the draft, a little more needs, but I have, you know, I have four or five different needs that I need and the kind of football player that I want in my building. You know, there's guys, as you guys know, through the years, right? You know, Eddie Jackson, you know, Henry Melton, fourth round pick, guys who, Alex Brown, right? Guys who have made it and contributed. Josh Beekman out of Boston College, right? Ryan Poe's teammate. You know, a guy that helped us out in interior of the offensive line, you know. So, you know, if you're looking for a coach, I think the Chicago Bears got Marcus Freeman there in 2009. So, but just guys who can who can help your team with depth. And if you're, you know, David talked about when we had him on, like, guys get injured, man. So when you look at the interior of the Bears offensive line, even though they threw a lot of assets at it this offseason, well, who comes in, right? And Ryan Bates had injuries last year. We didn't see much of him either, right? And Doug Kramer, we've seen some of him, but just a little more competition in the interior of that offensive line. And we just talked about the safety issues also. So we'll see where the Chicago Bears go today. But I think more, a little more, I lean late in the draft, a little more need, but at like four or five different positions.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. You know, you can do well later in a draft. The problem is the Bears have used a lot of those later picks to pick up other players in the last couple of years. You know what I mean? Like we saw it again this year. So I don't know. You know, the fourth round pick, the fifth round pick, but they don't have a sixth round pick, and they already traded one of their sevenths away. So they got 1/7, and it's going to be interesting to see what they can do. Because I look at them and I think that there's a few positions that you do kind of jump out at you. You wonder about how, you know, where they're at with the left tackle. You wonder about where they're at with the depth of the offensive line. They haven't really made a lot of moves on defense at all from last year's team. They obviously got a tackle and a.
I think they're very different, though. I think they're very different. You look at Grady Jarrett coming in, giving you something you didn't have on your defensive line.
Right.
Adio Adangbo is somebody that gives you potential, not production maybe. He's a traits guy. I think he fits in Dennis Allen's scheme. And now you've added Shamar Turner to the mix, another one of these SEC linemen that is what did David Sivertson refer to him as? A big, strong, angry dude. And he could be.
Did you hear what Saban said about him on the broadcast last night? Said he's got to learn to control his emotions.
That's a tough one to hear from Nick Saban because he doesn't exaggerate, and I think he's pretty on point. Olin, you also said in researching some of the details of Turner's past, you mentioned stress fracture, and his medicals are a little bit of a concern. What do you think about him in terms of a prospect, and does he represent more risk or reward for the Bears?
Well, first, those are the kind of guys I put a yes by when I hear, well, he has to learn how to control his emotions. I say, okay, yes, that's who I want on my team.
Yeah, get that guy.
You know, and Andrew Billings coming back also, right?
Right, we'll
add him to that mix. So that room is, you know, if healthy, is deep, right? Javon Dexter, we want him to keep developing. Wondering where Zach Pickens fits in, right? But Shamar Turner, when you watch him, you do see the violence. You see the explosiveness. You see the suddenness. A little better against a run, right, when you watch him on film right now, which leaves you wondering where the pass rush comes from. But Grady Jarrett now, hell of a pass rusher, right? And he can maybe show Shamar Turner a few things. So this room, all of a sudden now, you know, a chance to be with Andrew Billings coming back, signing Grady Jarrett, Montez Sweat, Javon Dexter, Shamar Turner. Interested to see this room, guys, in preseason, see them in camp, see what they can develop into, because they have some guys and some names in that room. But Shamar Turner, you like what you see on film versus the run. You want to see a little more getting to the quarterback, but definitely a guy who does like to, as you talked about, Mully, does like to play with his emotions, likes to play fast, aggressive, violent, and get after the running back when the other team is trying to run the ball, which, as you guys know, after they lost Andrew Billings last year, that was a problem.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. And I think that that makes you it leads us to kind of one of the starting positions that we haven't talked about, which is Tyrique Stevenson, and specifically, you know, where he is at, how he will recover from what happened last year. He seemed, obviously we all know what happened in the Washington game, but he seemed to not handle the discipline he got from that very well. I know they got a new coach in there, and I know that there are new people that will be dealing with him, but you just worry that a guy like that who let his emotions get away from him in a really negative fashion and maybe had a concentration problem at various points, you worry about how that is going to work out if things don't go his way.
Yeah, you immediately think about that Hail Mary, right? And that's the play we all remember, and there was a few other things that we heard about after that, when they told him he was going to sit out, you know, the first quarter, I think, of the next game, he walked off the field. You just heard a lot of things about Tyrique Stevenson. But like you're talking about, Mully, Al Harris coming in, right?
Yep.
Defensive backs coach.
Yep.
Pass game coordinator, former cornerback in the NFL for the Eagles, well-respected player, a coach on the rise here, a guy you can see becoming a defense coordinator somewhere and even maybe becoming a head coach like Aaron Glenn did for the Detroit Lions if the Chicago Bears have success while he's here. So a guy like that, former player, earned Tyrique Stevenson's respect, coach him up, let them know very clearly, this is what we expect. This is our standard. This is our culture. This is what you will do. And if you do these things, we'll let you be who you are. Play football. Make sure it's all about the team. I think a guy like Al Harris becomes valuable when you have a guy like Tyreek Stevenson, a guy who can understand a former player's, you know, point of view, the way they want to play with emotions. Use that emotion for good. Don't let it lead you down the wrong direction. So hopefully that hire there really helps Tyreek Stevenson develop into the kind of cornerback I think a lot of us, when we watch him play, think he can be.
I think so, too, because you look at him coming out of Miami. And, yes, he adapted well because of his physicality and the defensive style they were asking him to play. It fit. I mean, he could be your prototypical cover two corner because of his size and strengths. But he came out of Miami, and I remember people wondering, well, he plays a lot of man. He plays man coverage very well. And how will he fit and how will he translate? Now he's in a situation where they might ask him to do more of that. It may play to his strengths better than they have in the first couple seasons. And he also has to look in the mirror here and realize that he's at a pivot point for his career. He's not going to have a change of scenery, but he has a change of staff. And what that can do for a player, and only probably some people in your past probably come to mind, you never had to worry about such a thing, but Tyreek Stevenson is on, you know, he's got 1 foot out the door, maybe, in terms of, for your front office's point of view, because of how distracted he allowed himself to become at times last year. But this is also an opportunity. If he has a skill set that they will get the most out of, Al Harris can help revive his career, and he's still a pretty young man.
Yeah, Tyreek Stevenson is 24 years old, right? He's 24, only 24 years old. So a lot of guys are that age coming out of college, right? So it's just like you're saying, David, man, when you watch this guy play football, you're saying he only played, you know, I was worried about, does he just play man? You saw him in zone. Sometimes he feels like a linebacker, right? He comes downhill with an attitude, plays football a lot of times the way you want to see guys play football. He adds that violence. You know, he doesn't mind tackling, doesn't mind getting after people, doesn't mind talking trash. I watched him last year sometimes. I thought to myself, if he could, he reminded me of Gardner Johnson from the New Orleans Saints and the Philadelphia Eagles and the Lions, the way he got under people's skin. And if he could just, you know, draw those penalties on the other team, right? Use what he does well against the other team. He's an interesting guy to watch this year. And if he can develop and Al Harris can develop him and keep Brisker on the field with Jalen Johnson, man, this could be a really, really good secondary, right? With Kyler Gordon, they just paid. So just an interesting unit overall.
All right, we'll be right back here. It is the draft show, the draft special with Mully and Haw and the great Olin Krutz on the Score.
Have you talked to Cole Kmet yet?
He actually texted me. He reached out, just said a nice message. Excited to get to work with you. Let's go win some games.
Let's get back to more of the Mully and Haw draft special featuring Olin Krutz on Sports Radio 670 The Score and the free Odyssey app.
Mully and Haw and Olin Krutz getting you ready for the draft, which is about to restart here. And you just heard the voice of Colson Loveland saying that that Cole Kmet contacted him. Let's get to work.
Colson Loveland heard from Cole Kmet. He heard from Caleb Williams. He's heard probably from more teammates. And I think that Cole Kmet, how he handles this draft reality is something that's I find very interesting. I'm very curious to see how he'll handle it. Olin, I expect him to deal with it like a pro. Mm-hmm. I think that he had a C on his jersey, like a lot of people, but he was a captain and leader in that locker room. And I would expect the Cole Kmet, he just wants to win. And I think that it's easy to say he's also getting handsomely paid to be a team guy.
He's got a 4-year, $50 million deal.
He's set to he's due to make $9.9 million next year. So, Olin, knowing the situation and knowing that dynamic of guys who, you know, you see guys drafted at your position and you might be a different dynamic when you return, how do you think Cole Kmet will handle this news?
Oh, I think he'll be fine. I think what you heard from the rookie tight end about Cole Kmet texting him, I think that's how Cole Kmet feels. I think Loveland, I think Cole Kmet immediately thought about, you know, I'll help this kid and mentor him. And you know, it's your job to show people everything you know and then to stay better than them, right? And that's the NFL. That guys come in every year and they're really good. You know, obviously it's never comfortable when it's a guy in the first round taking at your position. And I'm sure that's a little bit of a shock for whatever Cole Kmet was doing that draft, you know, day, maybe golfing or something somewhere. And all of a sudden you get to it comes up on your phone, Bears take a tight end, right? And then you realize, oh, man, I'm a tight end. Right? So, that's always a not a comfortable feeling for anybody, right? In the NFL, we all know how hard it is to keep your job there. But knowing that, you know, Loveland is a totally different tight end than Cole Kmet is. Now, like we talked about earlier, some of his opportunities, right, with all these weapons they have now, I'm sure Cole Kmet wants some clarity on where he fits in to the situation that Chicago Bears have now. But I'm sure after watching Cole Kmet for all these years and hearing him on the many podcasts and radio shows that he does, I'm sure he'll handle it well.
Did it take you back, Ola? Because you mentioned him earlier, and Josh Beekman was a Bear for 3 years. When he was drafted, I think he was in the fourth round, perhaps. But you were probably at the peak of your career or near the peak. And I wonder what your reaction was when they drafted a center from Boston College.
Yeah, I think Beekman. I forget exactly what year it was, but I think I was already in my 11th or 12th year, so I kind of knew that my time was you know, they had to get someone to develop. And but like you're saying, you know, he came in. I understood why he was there. You know, he was there that if he was good enough, he was going to take my job, right? And I just it's motivation. It's never a comfortable feeling. Now, he wasn't a first round center.
Fourth rounder, 130th overall in 2007.
2007, yeah. So that would have been my 12th year, 11th year. I'm sorry. But it's just, it's never a comfortable feeling, David. It never is when a guy comes in and you're kind of, you're mentoring a guy that they want to take your job. And I remember Jerry Angelo saying about Josh Beekman that, you know, the one thing he liked a lot about him was he had really rare leadership ability, right? And you could see that in Josh right away with the way he worked, the way he came into the room and the way he worked on things. Now, his career didn't develop into, I'm sure, what he wanted it to develop into. But I have gone through that, like you're saying. It wasn't at the peak of my career, but it was, you know, at a time when I still wanted to be a Chicago Bear, and I still wanted to be the starting center for the Chicago Bears. And you go through these things, and you have no choice, man. You got to go in there. You got to compete and see. May the best man win.
I wonder, Olin, when you think about Cole Kmet and his time as a Bears tight end, there have been games where he was untargeted. I just want to try to figure out when that sort of thing happens. Is that due? I mean, there's obviously the quarterbacks getting sacked a lot. Is it due to? And they had struggles with the play callers. But is, like, do you want a guy coming into the huddle like, hey, what are you doing? I'm wide open. Look at me here. Or is it acceptable to have games where you aren't productive because you can't get the ball thrown your way?
Well, you know, I know they had Keenan Allen, DJ Moore, and Rome Odunze on the field last year, right? And last year, guys, I mean, when you go through – what just happened with the Chicago Bears last year, with firing the OC, firing the head coach, the end of games. I mean, just the amount of – it's so hard in the NFL anyway, right, to win football games, to be productive, to work on your career, to get it moving in the right direction. And to go through all the chaos that they went through last year up there at Hallis Hall, and brand new head coach, and they made the he guy wasn't even a position coach, and Caleb said he barely talked to Thomas Brown. It was, think about all the things we talked about last year, right? And how Cole Kmet wasn't productive. I don't wonder why so many guys struggled in that building last year, I guess is what I'm trying to say, right? I don't really know how to evaluate or analyze all the guys who were in the building last year with everything that went on with their coaching staff. And, you know, it was just something, you know, I hate to say that. Seems like the Bears go through something like that every 4 or 5 years, but it just, as normal as it is here, it's just something that's not normal in the NFL if you want players to develop and be productive. So I'm sure, like everybody else with this new coaching staff coming in, Cole Kmet's excited also to work with Ben Johnson, who I think it was a tight end coach first, right?
Yep.
And so was Declan Doyle, right? So
yes.
Just a lot of guys who know about tight ends, who know about using tight ends, and I'm sure Cole Komet, they still have Dre there as their tight end coach. So I'm sure he's excited also to get going and see where he fits into this offense.
Great points, Olin. We're going to be back after a break. The drafts will resume in the fourth round. But just to close the loop on Josh Beekman, because I know you're wondering, he is now the director of football initiatives at Boston College. Yes. So probably help supply some intel, some background on the second-round pick, Ozzie Trapio, who is an offensive tackle the Bears drafted last night and expect to compete for a spot on that offensive line.
Let's get him on the phone.
Let's get him on the phone.
I think we're gonna get Dave Wannstedt on the phone. I think Coach Wannstedt wants to talk to you, Olin. So I think he's got another offer to take you down to Miami. I don't know what's going on.
Let me pour some bourbon first. Whenever Coach gets going, man, it's always a good show.
Great stuff. We'll be right back on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.